Okay, so the main theme in today's talk is you know, we want to build a universal quantum computer, photonic quantum computer, using the fewest possible resources. And you know, that's a pretty significant challenge, and there's been many different proposals. So we'll explore one particular avenue today. So let's just begin by, you know, asking what are the, you know, the basic ingredients that we want to have to build a quantum computer. So obviously we're going to need qubits with long coherence times if we want to build a universal quantum computer. We have to be able to do gates reliably, otherwise, you know, a lot of errors could be introduced into the system. And gates have to be fast and measurements have to be fast. So we'll talk a little bit about that later on. And then because errors are unavoidable, we have to have an ability to correct errors. And in particular, because our gates are not perfect, our measurements are not perfect, we have to do this in such a way that errors, you know, won't spread badly and they'll remain correctable. And so this is the whole idea behind Fulton error correction. But today we'll focus on Fulton quantum computation. So this is where, you know, if we want to implement a quantum algorithm, we have to do gates and several gates. And these gates have to be very reliable. And so we also have to do error correction in this case, but we have to implement these gates in a way that the errors remain correctable and that we can have very, very low logical failure rates. So a very natural way to implement gates in a Fultonically is using transversal operations. So these are just operations where we use single qubit gates within a code block to do a logical gate within that code block. Or where we're interacting, say, the ith qubit in one code block with the ith qubit in the second code block. So for example here, this is an example of transversal C0s, and you see that if, you know, if there's a single error on one of the blocks, it'll propagate to at most one error on any of the code blocks. But if the C0s are not done in a transversal way, like the example on the right, then a single error can propagate to multiple errors within the same code block. And these are situations we like to avoid. So it'd be really nice if within a universal gate set, all the gates could be implemented transversally, because then, you know, errors would never spread badly. But there's this theorem called the Easton-Knill theorem that says that within a universal gate set, there's always going to be at least one of the gates, which can't be done transversally. So if we want to do Fultonic quantum computation, we're going to have some clever ways of doing these non-transversal gates in such a way that we could still achieve very low noise rates and that the errors don't spread in a bad way. So there have been many different approaches for dealing with this problem. And the most, I guess, common one is magic state distillation. And that's going to be, you know, a focus in the talk today, so I'll talk about this later. But I'd just like to hear, you know, briefly mention other approaches that people have looked at. So one approach is called universal concatenated quantum codes. So this is where you have, say, two codes where the gate in one of the codes, which can't be implemented transversally, is transversal in this other code, and vice versa. And the idea is that you take these two codes and you concatenate them. And you concatenate them in such a way that all the gates in the universal gate set are fault tolerant. You know, the errors are still going to spread in a bad way because, you know, these gates are not all transversal, but they'll still remain correctable within certain code blocks. And right, so the caveat here is that by doing this, you're sacrificing the distance, the overall distance of the code. So your ability to correct errors is decreased, but you can still correct some errors. And now there have been other approaches, which you know, is known as code switching. So the idea is a little bit similar here, is again, you have this scenario, we have two codes, two families of codes, say, where, you know, one gate is non-transversal, but it is in the other code and vice versa. And so you can imagine during the algorithm, when you're doing gates that are transversal in one of the codes, you know, you're encoded in that code. And then when you have to do the non-transversal gate, you in some way faultonically switch to this other code. Do your gates in this new code, and whenever you're done, you can switch back to the other code. And the key is that this switching between the codes can be done in a fault-tolerant way such that the errors don't spread. There have been, you know, other approaches. For example, if you have a family of codes called triorthogonal codes, which implements control-control Z gates and T gates transversally. In these codes, Hadamard gates are not transversal, but you can get around that by implementing the Hadamard gate in a transversal way and then doing error correction in a particular way such that the errors that are introduced remain correctable. And then lastly, there's been recently, I think in 2016, another approach, which is that you take you take your gates that are not transversal in one of the codes, and you do intermediate rounds of error correction. And you know, these intermediate rounds of error correction are cleverly chosen such that although errors can spread, they will remain correctable. But today I'll focus on magic state distillation approaches. Okay, so what is
magic state distillation?
So before describing this, I'd just like to be clear, what the Clifford group is in case it's unfamiliar. So Clifford gates are just gates that map polys to polys, and they can be generated by Hadamard phase gates on single qubits, and then the C naught gate. So this is a generating set for the Clifford group, and so imagine that Clifford gates can be done transversely, or Clifford gates are free essentially, and so in this case you'd like to do a non Clifford gate in a fault tolerant way. So you can do all your operations. So the idea is that all your operations are going to be Clifford gates, but additionally you're going to have certain states, which I'll call resource states, that allow you to simulate the non-transversal gate. And the reason that these states are called magic states is because they have the additional property that they can be distilled using only Clifford gates. So to summarize, you want to implement a non-Clifford gate, and if you have these resource states available, you can use those states with Clifford operations to simulate that gate. And additionally, you can distill these states using only Clifford operations as well, to get really low failure rates on the logical gate that you want to implement. So I'd just like to show you how resource state can be used to implement phase shift gates. So phase shift gate is just a gate like this. And for example, if theta is pi over 4, this would be a T gate, which is not Clifford. And so if you have Clifford gates in addition with a T gate, then you can you have a universal gate set. So imagine that I have a state A theta, which is this linear combination of 0 and 1 with this phase here. And I'd like to implement this gate on an arbitrary state psi. Then the trick is actually fairly simple. All you have to do is prepare this state here, psi tensor product A theta, and you measure the operator ZZ. And after the measurement, you apply a C naught between the first and the second qubit, with the first qubit being the control qubit. And if you work out what this circuit does, you'll see that if you discard the second qubit, you'll effectively implement this gate on the state psi. But there's a, with 50% probability, you'll implement the right gate, and with 50% probability, you'll have the wrong sign here. And you'll know when that happens, because the measurement outcome that you have here will tell you whether you've applied the plus or minus theta. So if you did the wrong gate, you could just repeat this process. And every time you repeat, you'll apply a gate on this state with a different value, a particular integer here, and you'd like this integer to be 1. And then you can show using random walk arguments that eventually you'll get the integer 1. And if you ask, how many times do I have to repeat this circuit? Generally speaking, if the probability that you have to repeat it more than n times scales as n to the minus 1/2. But if theta is a rational product, so it's a product of 2 pi times a rational number, then you can show that the probability that you need more than n repetitions decreases exponentially. Right, so for the T gate, right, you wouldn't have to repeat this circuit many times. So this shows how you can use resource states to do the gates that you want. Now we'd like to focus on, in this part, we assume that the resource state was perfect, and in reality, when you prepare these states, they're never going to be perfect. So you want to have very reliable resource states. So this is what we're going to focus on now. So there are many different ways that you can get. You can purify these states. And one of them is called magic state distillation. And the idea is that you can use additional resource states along with Clifford group operations to measure relevant operators that would tell you whether there was an error on this state or not. Now, the problem is that these additional resource states could be noisy. There could be errors in these states as well. And if that happens, you know, then the measurement outcome could be incorrect, and you wouldn't know that. And so the idea is that you would encode your resource state in an error correcting or in an error detecting code, and then you'd have a circuit that would allow you to measure a logical operator, which tells you if there's an error on this state. But at the same time, you measure an error syndrome, which would allow you to know if there were errors on the additional resource states that you used to distill the state. And if that happens, then you would reject the state, and you'd only take states that passed the verification test. So if the syndrome was trivial and you measured the correct eigenvalue of the logical operator of interest, then you would accept the state. So the idea is that, you know, you prepare many of these states. Some of them would pass this verification test, some would not. And then all the states that passed, you know, you can repeat this process again and again and again until you get a state with the desired logical failure rate. Okay, so one example of this is I think it's one of the simplest distillation sequences that we know of, and it's a protocol that's from Meyerstein and Knill, so we'll just call it the MEK protocol. So let's consider this state here, an H state, which is this linear combination of 0 and 1, and this state is actually a plus 1 eigenstate of the Hadamard operator. And it turns out that it is a resource state because if you take the state a power 4, it's related to the H state by product of Clifford's. So an H state could be used to simulate non-Clifford gate. Now, if there was a Y error on the H state, it would be the minus 1 eigenstate of the Hadamard operator instead of the plus 1. So if you want to detect whether there's a Y error on an H state, you can just measure the Hadamard operator, and this is a circuit that would do that, and then you know whether there's Y error or not. Now, of course, the control Hadamard gate is not a Clifford gate, but you can decompose the control Hadamard in terms of a control Z and two T gates, and the T gate could be simulated using an additional resource state. So, you know, earlier on I said you can use resource states such that the whole circuit is just Clifford's and resource states in order to measure whether there's an error or not. And you can see how this is done in this particular case. Now, like I said before, you know, there could be errors on these states here which would give you the wrong measurement outcome. And so like I mentioned before, here we're going to encode these resource states into an error detecting code, and we'll encode it into the 422 code. The reason we do that is that if you look at the stabilizers and the logical operators of the 422 code, you'll notice that the operator H tensor 4 is a logical operator for this code, and implements a logical Hadamard on the two logical qubits, and then it swaps them. And so you can use this code to measure a logical Hadamard operator on both of these logical qubits, and you'll know whether you have the right state or not. But again, because there are errors in these states, in these additional resource states, we're going to encode it into an error detecting code, the 422 code. And we'll use this circuit instead. So here we're just measuring H tensor 4, which is the relevant operator that we'd like to measure here. And you know, in MEK, they showed that this circuit can be simplified. And so you only need a total of 4 control Hadamard gates. So you need 8 resource states to do the measurement, and then you have 2 logical resource states that you encode into the 422 code. And so depending on what you measure here and depending on the value of the logical operator, you know, you implement this circuit, and then you'll either accept the state or not, and you just repeat that recursively. Now, often when people think about magic state distillation, they're imagining a scenario where Clifford gates are perfect. There's no noise in the Clifford gates, and the noise only arises in the resource states. But in reality, you know, if you talk to experimentalists, Clifford gates can be fairly noisy. In particular, two-qubit gates are often the noisiest component of a quantum computer. And so, if we want to be realistic and say, you know, how useful can these magic state distillation protocol be, we really should consider what happens when there are errors in Clifford gates. If you look at, for example, this circuit here, if there are errors in a single error in a Clifford gate, it could completely mess up the properties of the circuit. So this circuit is not inherently fault tolerant when Clifford gates are allowed to have errors. And so what you would need to do if you really wanted to do this is that you need to use encoded Clifford gates. So Clifford gates that are encoded in you know, a very large code such that the overall error rate of the Cliffords would be very small. And so this is going to add, you know, a lot of overhead to the scheme, and it could have a lot of undesirable properties. And particularly, you know, depending on which algorithm you want to implement, you know, typical logical failure rates that you like to have in your T-gates or your non-Clifford gates is, say, between 10 minus 10 and 10 minus 15. And so if you really, you know, do the analysis carefully, you'll see that the overhead could be quite substantial when you're doing magic state distillation with encoded Clifford gates. So my motivation was, you know, is there a way that this could be done differently? Meaning that instead of doing, you know, distillation sequences with logical Clifford gates and repeating that multiple times, perhaps we could just fault-tolerantly prepare a magic state directly using schemes that don't require too many resources. And so this is the idea in this talk. So, you know, this was looked at previously. You know, one particular example is something that I found in a paper by Daniel, where the resource states are encoded in the 7-qubit code, scene 7-qubit code, and they're just prepared fault-tolerantly using, you know, traditional fault-tolerant methods. The problem with, you know, previous schemes is that typically you need very large Ancilla states in order to measure the relevant logical operators that allows you to detect if there's errors or not in these encoded states. And preparing these large Ancilla states, and in this example, it's the cat state, you know, this could be very, very costly. And so we'd like to avoid this situation. And furthermore, you know, you have to do rounds of error correction when you fault-tolerantly prepare, you know, a state. And these rounds of error correction could also, you know, have a large footprint on the overall circuit. And so, you know, what I'll talk about now is how this could be done using flag qubits, and you'll see that you're not going to require large Ancilla states in order to measure the relevant logical operators. And furthermore, the error correction circuits are going to be much smaller. Okay, so I think I pretty much said what's on this slide, so let me just skip it. So before I describe the protocol, I'll just talk a little bit about what error correction circuits I'm using and you know, the codes that I'm using. So the code that we'll be considering here is the Steen code. And the reason is because with the Steen code, all Clifford gates are transversal. And so in particular, if you wanted to measure the Hadamard operator, you know, you just do a physical Hadamard gate on each of the physical qubits. So measuring the Hadamard operator is fairly straightforward. Now, recently, there was a paper that came out by Ben Reichardt, which showed how to do error correction using flag qubits with the Steen code. And the main contribution here is that this error correction was highly parallelized. So let me talk a little bit about flags and the idea here. So, you know, the idea behind flag qubits is to say, you know, if I want to do fault-tolerant error correction, what is the minimal number of Ancillas that I need in order to do that? And it turns out that for the 7-qubit code, you only need 2 Ancillas to do fault-tolerant error correction. The problem is that if you only use 2 Ancillas, you have to measure, you know, each stabilizer one at a time. And so, you know, these circuits could be highly inefficient in practice. And so the advantage of this circuit here is that it's highly parallelized, whereas you just, you know, you can measure all the stabilizers within this whole circuit here. So you don't need to have one circuit for each stabilizer, and there's 6 stabilizers in this case. And the, you know, the Ancillas are arranged just that whenever there are errors that spread in a bad way, you know, you get information about that. And if you repeat the syndrome measurement, you'll know what these errors are, you know, assuming that the number of faults is small, and you'll be able to correct them. So this is the error correction component that we'll be using in our scheme. Because the number of qubits isn't too large, right? There's only 3 Ancillas, and it's a highly parallelized circuit. And additionally, this circuit can be implemented using nearest neighbor interactions. Ben Reichardt showed us how to do that. And you know, the circuit for preparing an H state is as follows, but you know, this circuit isn't fault tolerant, right? Because if you look at all these C naughts, errors can spread in a bad way, and so we wouldn't want to use a circuit like that. So here's what we're going to do. There's 2 schemes that we came up with, and the first one is an error detection scheme. So the idea is that we measure the Hadamard operator, and we add an extra Ancilla qubit, a flag qubit. And whenever there's a fault, which, say, a single fault on one of these gates, which leads to a higher weight error, you know, you'll detect this in one of these fly qubits, and you would just reject the state. So, you know, there is an additional overhead cost associated with, given that this is an error detection scheme. And so one could ask, well, is it possible to have an error correction scheme where we never have to reject the state? And the answer is yes. And in an error correction scheme, you use a circuit like this. And this circuit is a little bit complicated, but basically what's going on is that these extransilla qubits allow you to localize errors. And so you would know, you know, what types of errors happened, and then if you did a round of error correction afterwards, you'd be able to correct those errors. So that's the main idea here. The problem with this approach is that you need multiple rounds of error correction, and you need to apply the circuit three times. And so the number of locations is going to be much larger, and so the overall overhead, the threshold for this scheme is going to be very low. So practically speaking, the error detection scheme would be much more favorable. Yes?
So the error detection scheme uses one fly qubit, right?
So this ancilla is used to measure the Hadamard operator, and then there's... That's right.
Whereas with the error correction, you have three fly qubits.
That's right.
Do you know that you cannot achieve error correction with two fly qubits?
Right. So what we showed is that the minimal number of fly qubits you need in the error correction scheme is three. It's impossible to do it with two. And the reason is that if you only use two fly qubits, you know, without going into too many details, errors on this fourth control Hadamard gate, you would not be able to identify those errors with errors happening in other places of the circuit. And so you really need this third ancilla qubit to localize errors on this fourth control Hadamard gate.
And the proof is by basically exhaustively checking all possibilities.
Correct. Yes. Were there other questions about this? Okay. So now I should add one more thing. Now, if you want to achieve very low logical failure rates, you have to ask, well, how are we going to scale this approach up? Right? Because this is a 7-qubit code, and you know, if we want error rates of on the order of 10 minus 15 or 10 minus 10, we're going to need, you know, fairly large codes. So, The main challenge with using flag qubits is that as the, you know, if you were to use a code, say from the color code family, as you would increase the distance of the code, you'd have to measure higher and higher weight logical Hadamard operators, right? Because the logical Hadamard is just a Hadamard on each physical qubit. So as you grow the size of the code, the number of qubits increases, and you have to measure higher weight Hadamard operators. And this becomes very difficult to do it in a fault-tolerant way using flag qubits. So, you know, either you can figure out a circuit that works for, you know, all families all codes in the color code family, or you can concatenate this scheme, and then you just have to use the circuit here, where now the qubits would be encoded qubits. So, the concatenation scheme is straightforward. You know, I would say that we do have circuits for higher distance color codes, but, you know, it's very difficult to scale using this method. So we're going to stick with code concatenation here, because we could go to arbitrary distance codes and we'd have a fault-tolerant scheme to prepare the Hadamard state. We looked at what the overhead for the scheme is, and you know you could ask, what is the qubit overhead, what is the gate overhead, and so say that you want to achieve an error rate of say 10 minus 9, you would need roughly three levels of concatenation in order to do that, and you know, the order is about 2,000 qubits. But then you could ask, well, if we did magic state distillation schemes, the schemes that I talked about before, you know, how many qubits would you need to get comparable logical failure rates? And, you know, if you do the analysis carefully, you need maybe about a factor of 100 more qubits than this scheme. So there's about an improvement by two orders of magnitude compared to magic state distillation schemes. And I think, you know, the reason why... Well, I think this has been overlooked before, how large the cost of doing magic state distillation is, just because people are often assuming that Clifford gates are perfect. But when you really, you know, work in these realistic settings, it's actually quite shocking how large the overhead is for magic state distillation schemes. And so it's nice to see that, you know, with the flag qubit scheme, we could improve the number of qubits by a few orders of magnitude. And you know, depending on which error rate and depending on which physical error rate you're at, it could be even larger than a factor of 100. So, were there any questions about this part?
Both of
graphs are about your scheme, or are you comparing?
So yeah, both graphs are with our scheme. We're still not done doing the numerics with the Magic State Distillation schemes, just because it's quite involved, given that you have a lot of non Clifford gates, and you have to do a full density matrix simulation. But we do have results, and we do have estimates, and it's clear that the that's right, exactly. So I think this talk was only 30 minutes, quite short. But what I'd just like to conclude, like, what are the important things that we've discovered here? So like I mentioned before, it's difficult to measure high weight operators. So when you use flag error correction schemes, you're quite limited on the families of codes that you can use to do that. And in our case, we use code concatenation in order to achieve low logical failure rates. And you know, concatenated codes is probably not the most desirable scheme, given that you have to do a lot of long-range interactions between qubits that are far apart. But if we had the ability to do that, then you know, this might be a very, very nice scheme to consider. Now, in terms of overhead, you know, like I mentioned, with the comparisons between the Meyerstein-Knill, and you know, Meyerstein-Knill is one of the best magic state distillation schemes that we have. Now, of course, there are better schemes, and so you could potentially have big improvements. But the thing that I think should be really pointed out is that when people look to optimize magic state distillation schemes, they're often asking, you know, what is the fewest number of resource states that I need to implement the particular scheme? But when you're thinking about using encoding gates in your magic state distillation scheme, I believe this might not be the most relevant question, because these encoded gates are very costly. And so asking, you know, the more basic question, what is the number of qubits that you require, I think is more relevant in this scenario. So I think, you know, this kind of opens the way flag error correction was first designed just to do Fulton error correction, and then we've discovered that we can use this to, you know, efficiently do Fulton quantum computation. So I think there are many applications for flag qubits, and this is probably a very relevant. So that's it. Thank you.
So yeah. You mentioned in the beginning the Clifford groups that are these are noisy.
Yeah.
So that probably the noisier ones are the 2-qubit ones or multi-qubit ones.
Yeah. So 2-qubit gates are often the noisiest component,
but you're not optimizing, for instance, for like the lowest possible number of C nodes. You're optimizing something else. Will it be something else?
I see. So, right. So there, you know, there are different things you can optimize over. Now, the magic state distillation schemes, like I said before, what they're really trying to optimize is the number of resource states that you need to use. Because often, you know, they're working in a framework where the resource states are the noisy components, and you want to minimize that. But in our scheme, we're really asking, you know, can we implement this Fulton circuit using a very small number of qubits? And the reason is when you go to higher distance codes, the number of qubits would be fairly small. But then I agree, there's other things you could look to optimize as well, right? Yes.
Yeah, so the circuit on the left, essentially
this one?
A lot, the one on the left,
yes.
It's also a lot simpler.
In Correct.
You said the middle 5 qubits are treated fairly symmetrically
in right.
the circuit, so I think...
Right.
I'm a little surprised that some of these other schemes, like the one on the right hand side, they're a little sensitive to
right.
the ordering and so on. And it seems
exactly
if the error model is a little more complicated than the one analyzed,
right.
you may even see bigger advantage using the
right.
detection scheme.
Right, because here, you know, figuring out exactly what errors happen is extremely important because you're doing an error correction scheme. Whereas here, it doesn't really matter as long as all you need to know is that the, you know, the error spread in a bad way, and then you would just reject. The circuit start over, and it's also easier to generalize schemes like this to higher distance codes, you know, without using co-concatenation than it is for a scheme like that, and we do have circuits that generalize to higher distance codes. Thanks.